This is Ken Stringfellow of the Posies, Big Star, etc., and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. This morning, Julia Jorn heads to Coxsackie, where she speaks with Justine Post, who runs the Mansion and Reed General Store in Coxsackie. We will also hear new local music from the Nelson Esposito Quintana Band, and we'll hear national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Blanche Mackey Photography of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that following a three-month investigation, state police December 15th charged Nancy H. Smith, 71, of Claverack, the former director of the Columbia Children's Center in Greenport, with failure to report child abuse, alleging that she failed to make the proper notifications as a mandated reporter. Smith was issued an appearance ticket for the town of Greenport Court on December 27th. Anna M. Bauer, 63, of Livingston, was charged 2 days earlier with endangering the welfare of a child and was subsequently arrested, Trooper Aaron Hicks, Public Information Officer for State Police Troop K, said. Bauer was issued an appearance ticket for Greenport Court on December 27th as well, Hicks said. Bauer was an employee of the center. Police declined to provide details about the incident that led to the charges being filed. The investigation was opened September 9th into several reports of physical child abuse. Law enforcement visited the center to speak with parents, Hicks said, in an effort to identify current or former children who may have been victims. The investigation centered on an unidentified employee, now identified as Bauer, who stopped reporting for work after the investigation began, said Michael Howard, attorney for the Columbia Children's Center. Smith was replaced as director a week after the investigation began. Catherine Burdick is now acting director, according to the Office of Children and Family Services, a state agency that licensed the facility. Since September 17th, the Columbia Children's Center license has been listed as pending revocation by OCFS. The OCFS enforcement action will remain pending until the final decision is made by an administrative law judge, a court, or until the law enforcement action has been resolved. The daycare center has remained open since the investigation began. It has been licensed by the state since June 1991 when it moved into its current location. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mike Goodwin reports in the Times Union that COVID-19 hospitalizations in Albany County have reached the same level as February when few people were vaccinated. Officials in Albany said December 15th there were 66 county residents in hospitals, a number last seen on February 20th. Most of those hospitalized are unvaccinated. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said in a prepared statement, and I quote, "The best weapons in our arsenal to beat back this pandemic and keep people safe are vaccinations and booster shots, and that continues to be demonstrated in the latest data we have. Of the 66 county residents currently in the hospital with COVID, 70% are not vaccinated, 3% are partially vaccinated, and only 27% are fully vaccinated," end quote. He added, and I quote, "In the latest sign that COVID-19 is still a threat, we've returned to reporting new daily infections above 200 in Albany County, and sadly, we now have the most county residents hospitalized with the virus at one time since February 20th. Hospitalizations will likely increase in the days ahead as we continue to feel the post-Thanksgiving surge of COVID cases and head towards more holidays at the end of the month," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Brendan J. Lyons is reporting for the Times Union that state police interviewed Rensselaer Mayor Michael E. Stommel at City Hall December 14th and seized his mobile phone as part of an ongoing investigation into alleged absentee ballot fraud in the November election. Stommel initially declined to confirm that his phone was seized, but then added he was unsure why they would want to examine the device. Quote, "I myself or nobody affiliated with me during the election process that I am aware of had anything to do with any wrongdoing, with any absentee ballots or any voting intimidation or anything to do with the election other than assisting those people who wanted to vote by absentee ballots with their approvals," unquote, Stammel said. Bo Duffy, a state police spokesperson, said the agency is, quote, "conducting interviews as we do with any investigation, one being the Rensselaer mayor. Items have been seized as part of the investigation. However, we will not get into what particular items have been seized," unquote. Stommel, a Republican, won re-election when a judge recently certified his victory over Democratic challenger Richard J. Mooney. Mooney asked the court to throw out a significant number of absentee ballots, including some filed on behalf of voters who said they had not authorized anyone to file absentee ballots for them. Last month, a Rensselaer man told the Times Union that absentee ballots applied for on behalf of him and his wife were fraudulent because he has never voted in an election or applied to vote by absentee ballot. They said that someone had forged their signatures on the documents. The man also denied that he had ever met Rich Crist, whose name was listed on the absentee applications as the person authorized to pick up the ballots from the Board of Elections. Crist is the county's operations director and a longtime Republican operative and a confidant of county executive Steve McLaughlin. A criminal complaint that sparked the state police probe was filed by Todd Rakecki, a campaign volunteer for Mooney. Read more on the story about in the Times Union.
Joseph Spector reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that Governor Kathy Hochul started a mask mandate in the state December 13th to slow the rising death count from COVID-19. But even with rising case counts, hospitalizations, and deaths, officials in Greene and Dutchess County are ignoring the mask mandate and picking and choosing which state regulations to follow. Hochul said, and I quote, "I'm not going to engage in a political discussion about this. It's just too important. This is about getting us through a pandemic so we can finally say to everybody, you no longer need to wear a mask, period. That COVID vaccinations will be so routine for everyone that you won't think twice about it, just like every other vaccination," end quote. But Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro will let more deaths happen in his county. He wrote December 12th on Twitter, and I quote, "As we educate and inform residents to take the necessary mitigation steps to protect themselves and those they love, we will not escalate tension or conflict or further burden to our local small biz by allocating resources we do not have to this impractical and enforceable measure," end quote. The mask mandate in New York is in place through at least January 15th, requiring masks in all indoor public places in New York unless businesses or venues implement a vaccine requirement for entry. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Now, his wife will report in the Altamont Enterprise about how many local municipalities are breaking the law. A month ago, the open meetings law was updated, now requiring all public bodies in New York with websites to post meeting minutes within 2 weeks of a meeting's occurrence. Southern Albany County, Byrne was a day late last week getting the minutes of a November meeting posted, while in Knox, the most recent planning board minutes posted are from July. In Rensselaerville, it is worse, with the most recent planning board minutes from November of last year. But Rensselaerville is complying with the law, as they have not posted minutes, but have posted audio recordings of the meetings. Rensselaerville, New Scotland, and Gilderland have all posted meeting recordings. Rensselaerville also streams their meetings live. Quote, it is the responsibility of every municipality and unit of local government, there are thousands of them across the state, to stay aware of changes to state law that may affect them, unquote, said Kristen O'Neill, assistant director of the New York State Committee on Open Government. Read more about the story in the Altamont Enterprise.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that farm workers will have to wait until January to find out if they can get paid under the same rules as grocery employees and other workers. Currently, grocery store workers and other employees in New York State get overtime after 40 hours of work in a week. But farm workers do not get overtime pay until they work 60 hours a week. The New York State Department of Labor was set to resolve the issue, but pushed back the decision until after public hearings on the issue January 4th, January 18th, and January 20th. Agricultural lobbyists say farms would rather not pay increased wages. The three hearings are virtual, and anyone can sign up to testify. A link is provided on the WGXC Newsroom website. And you can read the full story at New York State of Politics.
Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a fight between two Catskill High School students captured by a cell phone camera has caused a district parent to call for a major overhaul of school district policies. The altercation took place on the afternoon of December 8th in the high school cafeteria. Video shows an unidentified student putting his arm around 10th grader Sean Walters, shoving him across the cafeteria, launching him across the table, and then falling to the floor. The unidentified student then stood over Walters and repeatedly punched him and stomped on his face before other students intervened to break up the fight. Troy Walters, the boy's father, said he was mortified when he saw the video. He said school officials did not contact him. Catskill School District Superintendent Ronell Cook said in an email to the paper that, quote, any code of conduct infraction that takes place in the district is investigated by the building principal. At the conclusion of the investigation, the building principal administers a consequence for the infraction, unquote. Troy Walters said he learned what happened from his daughter who saw the video on social media. Quote, I contacted the school and got hold of the principal, and as you can imagine, as a dad, I was pretty upset. I wanted to know what police agency was called and learned that they had never called a police agency, unquote, he said. In a statement about the incident posted to the Catskill School District website on December 15th, Cook explained that in, quote, instances that involve violence, we contact law enforcement, unquote. Catskill Village Police did not have a record of an arrest made in connection with the fight. After the fight, Sean Walters was taken to the nurse's office, while the other student was picked up by his mother and taken home shortly thereafter. The district has sworn out a trespass warrant against Sean's father, barring him from school property. Quote, I take ownership for that because, yes, I did lose my mind when I saw how battered and beaten my son was, unquote, he said. Walters said he has been receiving messages from dozens of parents in Catskill who say the school district has brushed aside bullying and assault cases in the past. Quote, they don't follow their protocols, unquote, he said. Quote, they won't even tell me how many violent assaults they've had on campus, unquote. Troy Walters is unsure at this point if he will allow his son to return to Catskill High. The full extent of Sean's injuries are still not known. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 61 degrees. Thursday night, a slight chance of showers before 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 45 degrees. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 52 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of rain after 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 33 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Thursday, December 16th, including at 10 a.m., Cheryl Kay talks with vocalist, composer, and New England Conservatory of Music educator Dominique Iadi and vocalist Darren Dean, an NEC graduate and current student at the Herbie Hancock Institute of Jazz Performance. Also, Cheryl Kay speaks with radio programmer Coco, host of Coco Jazz at CKVL in Montreal, on Situation Fluxus at 10 a.m., on WGXC. At 11 a.m., we have some more transformational listening on the Transformational Listening Show, tuning in songs from India today. And then at noon, we hear songs from Hudson, where Alan Skerritt is at in the WGXC studio with his Crossroads and Rhythm show with R&B, fusion, blues, rock, and more until 2 p.m. when it's time for What's the Frequency, Kenneth, the show that sets brand new music to the week's news. At 3 p.m., it's time to turn on the news, and the musical question asked this week is, how many stooges does it take to stage a coup? At 7 p.m., it's time for the Catskill Cabin Getaway Best of 2021 show. Then at 8 o'clock, we go live to the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, where the jazz band Pact is performing. That's Percy Jones on bass, Alex Skolnick on guitar, Kenny Grohowski on drums, and Tim Motzer on guitar. At 9 p.m., we head to Toronto, where Andrew O'Connor hosts the Disco 3000 show live on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Catskill High School Interact Club has scheduled its Martin Luther King March for Peace and Justice for February 17th. The event meets at the Second Baptist Church in Catskill at 5 p.m., and a candlelight march starts at 5:15 p.m. The group will march from the Second Baptist Church, that's at Upper Main Street on Catskill, to the Greene County Courthouse, to the Catskill Middle School lawn. That is, again, the Martin Luther King March for Peace and Justice, February 17th, organized by the Catskill High School Interact Club. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this event and many other community events in your area.
There's gonna be a battle royal between Father Christmas and Santa Claus.
WGXC is broadcasting again live music shows at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. And tune in for a live webcast Sunday, December 19th at 7:30 p.m. from the Avalon Lounge for Brian Dewan's annual Christmas show. That's Catskill artist Brian Dewan performing live Sunday, December 19th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill at 7:30 p.m. till 9 and on a live webcast at WGXC.org.
Santa Claus says, ho, ho, ho. Father Christmas glowers and frowns. He takes his staff and takes a swing. And Bowley says, put up your dukes. And then he takes that golden crook and hooks it around Santa's arm.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather with meteorological conditions for Greene and Columbia counties for Thursday, December 16th. Earlier this morning, we see 42 degrees in Turnwood and 48 degrees in Bull's Head. Things warm up a good deal today. 62 degrees is expected at 2 p.m. No rain during the day, but wind gusts do kick up just after dark, and a little precipitation comes down around midnight. Overnight lows reach 44 degrees just before dawn. Then we have a dry Friday with a high of 56 and some morning wind gusts. 32 degrees overnight takes us into a pretty wet Saturday. So far, models show it dropping a half inch of snow until noontime, then it turns to rain and wipes it all away. The freezing point will be broken early on, and a high of 37 is expected at 3 p.m. After dark, the rain continues and ends as snow just past midnight as temperatures drop to 30 degrees. We are riding the raggedy edge of that freezing point like we did for many snowfalls last year, so it could still become almost all rain or almost all snow, so stay tuned. Sunday will be dry with a high of 35. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:51 a.m., low tide at 7:07 a.m., high tide again at 1:15 p.m., and low tide again at 7:53 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 38 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:14 a.m. Looking way up, we see a large amount of dark cores are turning towards Earth in the sun's atmosphere. M-class solar flares are expected with geomagnetic unrest to follow. Solar wind speed is currently 539 kilometers per second at 7.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 3 megahertz for daytime and fair below 16 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 79. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Joshua Mail of Seattle, Washington. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Please,
That was jazz guitarist Jeff Parker with the song Four Folks from his 2021 album Four Folks.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening. Today I'm in the historic river town of Cooksackie to meet with Justine Post, one of two sisters who own Mansion and Reed, a quintessential general store that opened in 2017, was then revamped and reopened in 2021. We're sitting here in a sunny window here on the main street. I hear your refrigerators and freezers yes. humming in the background. There's so much in this shop that specializes in sourcing goods locally from New York, New York State farms, local makers, and has really been a part of this town's revival. The store offers everything from coffee to craft beer, a daily selection of bread and pastries, plus eggs and cheeses and ice cream and pasture-raised meats and plenty more from the region. Okay, so Justine, to start, how did you find Cooksackie?
Yes, we grew up in South Carolina in Charleston. But we actually found Cooksackie many years ago. The final year after high school, we did a bunch of volunteer programs and worked on the sloop Clearwater that went through all these Hudson Valley river towns, and one stop was Cooksackie.
What did that do?
And the Clearwater is an educational boat. It teaches kids about environmentalism and conservation. So we were sailing apprentices for a month. And we sailed from Yonkers all the way up to Albany. And,
so you were living on the boat?
We were living on the boat.
On
yes.
the Hudson River?
Yes. And wow. And we always remembered Cooksackie because we stopped and stayed overnight and someone let us use their shower. And so we always remembered that. And we remembered it being a beautiful little town that looks actually exactly the same as it did then. That was in like 99. We remembered the big, beautiful park. And at that time, Patrick Henry was open. So we remembered getting something to drink there, even though we were possibly underage.
I remember that. That was a great right. little corner bar, right?
Yes, right. A little dive bar mm-hmm. that had been around for decades, probably since, I don't know, the 50s or 60s. And everyone remembered it fondly. And so we remembered it as well, you know, all these years later.
So being a sailing apprentice in high school,
right.
and now fast forward to being a small business owner, yeah. what did you do first?
We actually went to school in Massachusetts. We always loved the Northeast. We went to Hampshire College.
You both went to the same school?
We did. Same artsy, great liberal arts school. And then I moved to the city for a long time and ended up getting my MFA in poetry and worked at various nonprofits and then actually moved to Houston, Texas for my PhD in poetry. And during that time, Leah was also getting her MFA, so we lived apart for like 15 years doing different things. I was in New York and Houston. Leah was in like London and Philadelphia and Charleston. And then she eventually opened an artist collective in Brooklyn, which had artist spaces and a gallery and events and things like that. But she was only renting. So eventually when she started to get priced out, the rent started doubling basically. It was in Greenpoint, so it started getting fancier. So then at that time she realized maybe she would prefer to buy something, and we'd always both loved upstate New York.
I can't believe you're coming from the poetry, but we have right. a resident poet here
right,
in
yes,
Greene
yes.
County. And to go from the creative arts and an artistic background
right.
into owning property,
right.
real estate, and now owning your own small business.
Right, yes. So it's a little bit of a strange leap, but it made sense. Lee actually studied photography and art, but she kind of started to enjoy the kind of art of renovation. So that's why we liked these old buildings so much. And me, I got my PhD, so the thinking was that I would end up getting a teaching job, but I sort of graduated at the wrong time and there were no teaching jobs. And I sort of realized that maybe I just wanted to run my own business.
Wow.
And with my sister, I left Houston to come here and she left Brooklyn to come here. And we met together and decided to get these buildings and become landlords and small business owners. And
and when you first acquired the buildings, did you know that your vision was to have a general store? Did you feel like the town was maybe missing something like that?
Yes. We had four storefronts and this one was empty. This beautiful open storefront was here. We knew we wanted to do something that would kind of be a little bit of a community center. We weren't exactly sure, but after living here for a while, we realized we wanted somewhere to get like milk and eggs and bread and coffee. There was no real place to get coffee nearby. So then we sort of just kind of percolated and realized that was something that we could do. We always loved food and loved local food and buying everything organic and probably living in the city where you could go to a corner store. So we kind of wanted to replicate that here in Coxsackie.
And have you sensed that your general store acts as a community hub?
A little bit. Yeah, I think so. We're open kind of longer hours. Most places before we were here would close at 2, and now we have the bottle shop and a few other places that are open more hours. But at the time, we were kind of the only thing open. But definitely people come in and get coffee and ask us what's happening in town, and people meet each other in the shops. Somehow having a coffee shop, I think, is a good community feeling
that.
For some reason. I'm not sure.
Coffee
yeah.
is a great connector.
I think so, yes.
I mean, just sitting here in your window, right. We can see everything from the library at the
right.
top of Main Street, which is
basically the corner of Mansion and Reed, which is hence our name.
And then, yeah. all, of course, I love the bottle shop, the wine shop.
Yes.
And then going down, there's a new bookstore, there's restaurants. And then, of course, from your store, it's a quick walk to the Hudson River.
Yes.
That's a great yes. anchor to this historic town.
Right. So we are almost literally right in the center of town. So we can have these big windows. We can see everything that's going on. And
that's all
yeah.
the people going by.
Yes. Yeah.
Stopping in.
Right.
So historically, what was this building back in the olden days?
It has always served as sort of a general store. So that was sort of why we realized that maybe we would like to bring a general store back. We know in the 50s it was the Marion store, which had like fabric and pots and pans and dishes, more of a variety store. And then after that, I think it was Vermilier's, which was also a general store. So they had hardware and stuff, but they also had a lunch counter. And maybe soda counter, I think we heard. So actually, we put in a new counter, and someone recently came in and they were like, "Oh, you put the counter back!"
Really?
So, so it's where it was. So you can actually see the outlines of the stools. So it was kind of nice to realize we're bringing back a little bit of something that used to be here. And,
without knowing
yeah,
it.
Without quite knowing it, yes.
Yeah. But I do love that element of your renovation to have this great counter right in the middle of the store.
Right, yes.
And then have the walls surrounded with all of this great stuff that's been
yes,
sourced,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
from around the region
right.
and beyond.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we like to, we try to do mostly local, but we have sort of expanded a little bit to support great small businesses from all over, but we try to do mostly Northeast, but some of them are a little farther away, but that's okay.
What has been the most fun and the most challenging about running your own small business? And I'm assuming you get along great with your twin sister.
Yes, yes, luckily. I know, I think we realized that we could have ever done it with anyone else. Basically, we've always been good friends. We went to college together and we were apart for 15 years, so it was fun to like come back together. We're like the twins again. Somehow we make it work.
who does
yeah.
what?
I do most of the sourcing of all the inventory, and Leah does more of the accounting and sort of the background stuff like that. And then we both, of course, work in the shop and make the coffee.
Do your customers get you a little confused every once
yes,
in a while?
Yes, all the time. Mm-hmm. Yes, we had name tags, which felt silly, but we lost them in the renovation, so we need to get them back.
Maybe you just answer to both names.
If you're a twin, it happens all the time. And the fun part is building something from the ground up. There was nothing here before, and we sort of dreamed up this business and just sort of making it really our own. And then, of course, getting to know the community, all the newcomers come to town and all the locals come to town. But opening the business has felt like we became a real part of the community, which has been very rewarding. It's definitely a small town, so sometimes people wonder why we opened.
Wonder why?
They're like,
the culture has gotten used to big box retailers moving into small towns.
Right.
And to have the alternative to a big box retailer here in Greene County, I think, is so important.
Yeah.
And someone I actually interviewed in Lexington, which is a population of just a couple of hundred people.
Wow.
And what they're working on is to start their own very small general store in the community, coming from the needs of the community.
Right.
So listening to what the community needs. So they're very excited to have their own small general store that they can walk to in town.
Right. Yeah. And we really like being able to source locally, so the dollars that are spent in the community, and we can support the other small businesses who are trying to make a go of it here in Greene County and the surrounding counties.
Well, it was great to read about your store in a larger article in the Times Union that talked about the revival of the general store in all of these towns. And from what I understand, it's the same need in every town. It's kind of like coming full circle after big box retailers, which, you know, in some ways, I get it. They do employ people from the community.
Of course.
But the money doesn't really go back into the community in the same way that a small business can be completely full circle. The people who work there, the things that you're sourcing, the things that people are buying goes directly back into the people who are doing the work in making the things. Making the food and making the cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and before we opened, we did a little tour of great general stores. Otto's in Germantown sort of revived the town center. We wanted to do kind of the same thing for Coxsackie.
Otto's is a great example. What were the other general stores you went to visit?
Circle W, of course.
In Palinville.
In Palinville. Wonderful, perfect, beautiful general store that's been there for many years.
Time.
We went to Cold Spring General Store, which was much different. So it's nice how each general store can kind of change according to the town needs. And then since then, some other ones have opened, since we've opened. So we've checked out Random Harvest, which is more of a recent one.
That's over in Columbia County, over on the other side of the river.
And there's someone else who's come to us for advice, who's maybe opening one in Rensselaerville eventually.
Excellent.
So we don't mind giving advice on opening your own general store.
We need more general stores.
I know.
Here in Greene County.
Yeah,
every town should have a general store.
I know. A new general store just opened, Athens General Store, right in Athens, like 8 minutes away.
8 minutes away? Well, I'm going to head there on my way back home to Round Top.
Very good.
Thank you, Justine.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for tuning in to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. If you're interested in checking out an ongoing list of local recommendations, or if you have recommendations of your own to share, go to my Instagram at roundtoprecommends or visit the Wave Farm website at wavefarm.org for the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment archives and how to reach me. Talk to you next time.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Any interest that you're paying on a loan will be increased if, in fact, we did not lift the debt ceiling.
The House of Representatives voted early Wednesday morning to bump the nation's debt limit to nearly $31 trillion. The measure passed 221 to 209 and now goes to President Joe Biden for his signature. Politico reports the move, which increased the debt limit by $2.5 trillion, will carry the U.S. into 2023 without the need to raise the borrowing cap further. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said if the measure had failed, the U.S. could have defaulted on its loans, resulting in widespread economic fallout.
Even the discussion of it a few years ago lowered our credit rating, the United States credit rating, and that was not a good thing for our economy.
Meanwhile, Congress is working on other items on its holiday to-do list, including the Build Back Better framework, which Pelosi says she's hopeful will get through both chambers by year's end. But Republicans have many reservations about the program. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina says the complexities in the framework's child care provisions would drive up costs and limit options for families.
This is literally an attempt to fundamentally transform what it means to take care of your child in the place you want to send your child.
Democrats say the bill would ensure no family pays more than 7% of their income on child care. The Senate has passed the 2022 National Defense Authorization Act, an annual bill to set spending priorities for the Pentagon and the armed forces. Among many other things, the nearly $770 billion package includes an additional $50 million in U.S. military aid to Ukraine, as Russian forces have been amassing along the Ukraine-Russian border, raising tensions between the two nations. Senator John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, says the funding will help prevent further incursions into Ukrainian territory.
Ukraine has spent years dealing with a Russian invasion that threatens to push further into its sovereign territory, and we should be supporting the efforts of this free nation to defend itself from Russian aggression.
President Joe Biden visited Kentucky Wednesday to survey damage from weekend storms that killed at least 74 people in the state, injured hundreds, and destroyed entire towns. FEMA and disaster relief groups have already been deployed to the region, and President Biden says the federal government will cover the state's disaster relief costs for 30 days.
It includes debris removal, cost of overtime and law enforcement, emergency service personnel, and shelter.
And finally, the Federal Reserve is tapering back its pandemic economic stimulus strategies. According to the New York Times, the move is an attempt to curb the recent jump in inflation, but could lead to higher interest rates in 2022. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Andrew Cuomo. Back when he was governor, Cuomo took a break from getting people in nursing homes killed to write a book about how brilliantly he was handling the pandemic. And that book made him very, very rich. At least until now.
Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is facing new troubles this morning. A state ethics panel ruled that Cuomo must now repay $5.1 million that he earned from a book that he wrote during the COVID-19 pandemic. That book was a memoir on the handling of the pandemic. The panel determined Cuomo used state resources and government staffers to help prepare that book, even though his lawyer previously said otherwise. The $5 million bill must be repaid by next month, but some of those funds have already been donated to charity and also added in a trust for his daughters.
Oh, well, I mean, if the money's in a trust fund for your adult daughters, just keep that. But the money to charity? Well, he's going to have to give that back. I actually feel bad for the charities, though. I mean, losing that money right before Christmas. I'm sorry, orphans. No presents this year because Governor Cuomo used the office printer. I know. But yes, Cuomo may have to give back all $5 million of his book money, which is fine by me. I mean, I don't understand why politicians are writing books while they're in office in the first place. You're just kind of flaunting how you got distracted with a side gig. Honestly, between being governor and writing this book, it's a wonder that he found time to sexually harass anyone at all. You know, the bigger issue here for me, actually, when I think about it, is like the money shouldn't go back to the government just because he used government resources. No, the money should go back because he wasn't doing the thing. If you write a book about a thing that you weren't doing, then you shouldn't get the money for the book because it wasn't real.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we hear local music from Nelson Esposito Quintana. That's Todd Nelson on guitar, Manuel Quintana on drums, and Kyle Esposito on bass. They're mostly based in Ulster County, and this is their 2021 track, Threshold.
Thank you.
like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Chocolate pigs.
I turned it down.
But only dogs can hear.
Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Next, we hear a song inspired by Radio Alice, one of the Italian free radio stations, or one might call pirate radio stations, that flourished in Italy in the 1970s when there was little oversight from the government. The radio stations lived in harmony and sort of worked together and did not interfere with each other. And Radio Alice was especially known for its programming that drew inspiration from the Situationists and Dada and has been described as, quote, a mix between a classical medium of militant information and a sort of art experiment in media sabotage, unquote. In 1988, the San Francisco band The Catheads released an album called Submarine with a song called Alice on the Radio. It included bass player Alan Korn, who later became a broadcast lawyer and worked with WGXC to get our FCC broadcast license. He wrote about Radio Alice in this song called Alice on the Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM.